Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, October the 4th, 2016, and this is our 325 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with our amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon, using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And before we get started, I want to thank James from North Wales for sending us a check once a month to host all these hours that people can listen anytime. So we all appreciate you, James. Thank you. And now I don't have to host anymore, and you are. So we all appreciate you, James. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, well, welcome back. And as I was saying, that we occasionally hear from Shaharon using you to transmit his voice into the recording. And when people write to me, like I have an email I received from Wendy in New Zealand, she's using my voice to record her voice into the recording. So it's the way we do it. I don't have someone to help me to take phone calls, and that gets involved. So we're just doing it by ourselves. But it's nice to hear from people, and it's Wendy writes. Well, we'll get into that when you're ready, but good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you, and good afternoon to me.
Got a big hurricane. Looks like Matthew might creep up the East Coast, yeah?
Yeah, well, we'll get something.
Some remnant.
Yeah, we'll get something. We'll see. I just looked at it this morning, and it says, Sunday. It'll get here by Sunday, or something will get here by Sunday.
Yes, powerful looking hurricane.
It doesn't look like it's moving. It was moving toward Haiti, and it looks like it's just stalled. It looks like it's moving 5 miles an hour. I mean,
poor Haiti.
North.
Smash.
Poor Haiti is.
You got tin roofs and tents there. They haven't even recovered from their earthquake years ago. So sad.
I was listening to Alex Jones, and I heard people say, Donald Trump should fly down there, do this and that before the hurricane gets there. And I mean, what do they think how he's getting there? He's flying. You can't be flying near all that wind.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that people are searching for God. Donald Trump is not God. And, you know, the thing about it is there is God. There definitely is a first source and center. But he is arranged to have his many sons, you know, the sons of God, you might call them. There's one begotten son, the creator's son. But of that, there are so many, you know, what you call different kinds or different facilities, I guess, people that are of different authorities. That's what the whole awakening, you know, the gift that Taninella gave to me was to really open up what is the arrangement of heaven, you know, at least in the areas which we can relate to. And they're, you know, looking upon us. They will not, you know, get to the point of being, you know, involved in our lives to the point that they live, you know, because our lives to become stifled. And definitely do not want us to become, you know, dependent upon them. But they're concerned. about, you know, things like hurricanes and stuff like that. But since they do happen, there are ways in which, you know, people need to help themselves. And it usually drives people to help one another, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And which is a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
Both before, you know, before something can come about, and after, you know. Just people just volunteer, you know, help one another, which is a very good aspect of the development of the soul. You know, it is good for the soul, people say. All is good for the soul. And it is, because it embosses. You know, like a printer embosses, or like a, you get a business card that it's embossed. It's got that textury feel. It.
Yeah, well, I used to be in printing, and it was a powder we would put over the ink when it was wet and put it under a lamp.
Yeah, it's sort of like that experience embosses onto our soul, if you were to think of our soul as a business card. Character, texture that can only be embossed through real living and truly following divine guidance. And one of the divine guidances is brotherly love, you know. And that's perhaps one of the things that, you know, stressful situations. Now, in California, on the West Coast, you know, they were worried about the whole big one happening because of the swarms of earthquakes that are happening over there. And it's still going to happen. These swarms are just warning shots. And it may very well happen because earthquakes are moving planetary-wise. But I still believe that there's a lot of activity that can be triggered, not by our planet, but by our planet's relationship to a very, very large electromagnetic engine, which is the sun, which actually does and has been kind of correlated to trigger various earthquakes from whether it be a CME, coronal mass ejection, or something like that, or even some kind of magnetic pulse.
Well, those plates, those tectonic plates, are still moving.
Yes,
the planet, definitely. The planet's still growing, and isn't that just like growing pains, these earthquakes?
Yes. There's what appears to be certain zones of stretch and movement like that. And these are where there's sinkholes appearing all over the world, you know. And even in Hawaii, my goodness, we have sinkholes appearing here too. And that kind of reveals that the road, the ground,
mm-hmm.
is not solid earth, you know. There's some movement there that can actually cause these holes to open up. Generally, you can trace them down. People say it's all because of water percolating down. Well, that's because there's an opening up somewhere.
Yeah.
You know.
I was in a high rise next to Fort DeRussy,
mm-hmm.
which is near Honolulu, as you know. And
yeah.
It was a 5.5 earthquake, and to me, it felt like the entire building just dropped. Maybe a quarter of an inch, but I definitely, it wasn't a shake. The whole thing just dropped, and it was like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah.
So I was out on the street because, you know, what's coming next? I'm from the East Coast. We don't really get earthquakes here. And when I lived in California, one time I was sitting in a car, and hey, I was parked. Engine wasn't parked, and all of a sudden I felt like I was rolling. Oh, I'm in an earthquake. I look out the window with an earthquake, and the wires from the telephone poles, they're all moving back and forth, and I'm out running and, you know, sort of running in the street, and
yeah.
Oh, there's a guy from the East Coast, they probably thought.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who don't live around earthquakes, it's a helpless feeling. There's no place to go, as they say.
Yeah, no, when I was place in Tokyo, to go. Tokyo, we had maybe 25, 30 miles away, epicenter was 7.
Mm.
And those guys are so cool, because all their buildings are all designed for earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was on the outside and running down 5 floors of the outside fire exit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the only guy running up and down. And we went down to the ground. And there were only a couple of people who, you know, were walking the streets looking around. And then right across the street was the fire department, and nobody did it was cared about that. The fire department wasn't even active.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I said, oh my goodness, I panicked. I didn't know. It was rough. I couldn't even walk in the hotel room. What is going on? I'm doing the hula.
Yeah.
But that's how different parts of the world are. Some parts of the world, you look at these structures, like in, I guess, the Middle East, where it got hit with some earthquakes, and their city is so old.
Oh, Italy.
Italy. Oh yeah, Italy was another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so
recent.
Old.
So, not built for earthquakes.
Definitely not. But it stood there for all these centuries. So something is happening worldwide, because structures that stay stable and are not, you know, any little shake would have knocked them down a long time ago, and yet they're only happening now. Like if I went to Japan, you know, there are pagodas, you know, those tall temple-like buildings that stack one on top of the other, many, many, many high.
Beautiful, yes.
Yeah, those things were designed to stand earthquakes. There's a big pole that runs down the middle of them that is a counterbalance.
Mm-hmm.
They never fall down. But they had earthquakes back then. But then when you look at Japan is right on a tectonic plate where it's pushing up mountains and volcanoes. So, well, different parts, but when you see these old ones, like, yeah, it was in Italy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Old. You know, this must date back to the Middle Ages or even earlier. It's hundreds of years ago. They were standing all that time, and then it hit.
But they didn't have earthquakes, did they?
Apparently not.
Apparently.
But things are changing. And I remember the concept for this year was a paradigm shift. Well, there's more shifting in a paradigm. The planet is shifting somewhat. But the paradigm is shifting. I'd like to see how, you know, the way the United States has to shift, it has to shift because the idea of globalization is wrong. You know, globalization in terms of governance, which would put the ruling power in the hands of those very few oligarchs that seem to be too rich for their own good. It has to shift. There's got to be a house cleaning. It looks like they're fighting real hard to make sure they stay in power.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to certain things get moved around. Getting back to the subject of the concept of our celestial friends ever get involved in our planetary governances or geologic affairs and struggles, weather conditions. And yes, they do. They do. But generally, they do it undercover, you know. Yeah. Covertly.
Undercover because they're... their rules are they don't get involved.
Yeah.
But they do get involved.
They do and can.
And can.
Yes. And they can even be released to do something by certain individuals, human beings, who are given, you might call, a kind of authority to be able to release them to do something. And that's where the concept of the working of miracles comes by, in terms of old biblical connotations, where if an individual could work miracles, of course that individual couldn't work a miracle because he's just a mortal, but he has the authority to call for help.
He's just a mortal.
Yeah, he's just a mortal.
He's just a mortal. He can't do anything.
He can't really do much, you know, unless he has technologies, of course. Mm-hmm. But now we're getting to that point, of course, having so many wonderful technologies. It's always inspired me to continue to see how they have come to so many, wow, very, very sophisticated devices that we have, all inspired. Well, anyway, that's a little
all,
bit of,
all inspired?
Yeah, they're all inspired. Whenever our devices are, you might say, one of the inspirations that I look at and I see is like Apple Computer. And there are so many things that when I compare Apple Computer's innovation and the little devices that I noticed my guide had up in the New Jerusalem, mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't have very much pockets and stuff to pull out some devices, but he had a little like a iPad,
mm-hmm.
that seemed to be very thin, you know. It was like super thin. I held it in my hand and I played a video game on it, but it was everything like a smartphone. Yeah. It was this communication device and everything. That's how they knew. In fact, a lot of these guys were carrying them, and I remember sitting at the place of where I was supposed to sit and watch everything, and all these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of little guys, gray aliens, would be considered gray aliens, hundreds and hundreds of them walk by, and I started to feel really homesome, because they looked at me like, oh, here's another human sitting on a bench. And it was a bench. And I reached out and touched one of them, you know, actually grabbed his hand, and he's kind of, but he immediately was able to communicate and said, hey, you got one human over here, he's kind of lost, so you need help him. Because within a short time, here comes the Dano, along with his big escort guys, I guess was what Riley called them, Neptunians.
Mm-hmm.
And they did look Polynesian. And they're very, very big. Well, 8 feet at least. Heavy built. Not lanky. Heavy built. And they already knew. I was confused. That's the first, some of the little things came up anyway. But the device that my guide had seemed to slip in his uniform. He had a uniform on, skin tight uniform. And he just pulled it out of almost like a magic trick, like a little playing card. Slipped in your sleeve, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Pulled it out, and there it was, and he's playing with it.
And you said you held it in your hand? I don't remember you ever saying that before.
Oh, yeah, because I was offered to play the game. It was a video game, but it was not a destructive video game. It was a video game. It's the opposite concept. You had to outbuild your opponent. And what we were doing was building our triangulation members. And you had to kind of keep building. And it was a three-dimensional space. You're building it. So you had to think in three dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so many of our games are two-dimensional. They're virtual, three-dimensional. But all of that was done way back then. I was thinking, gee, you know, all this stuff. And then the table that the teacher, the Dano, drew on top with his finger. And it just seemed like a tabletop. You know, like a... Actually, it had a consistency sort of like marble, the surface, highly polished marble glass, you know, but it wasn't clear like glass, it was more like a marble finish, or, you know, you might say, you know, pearlescent finish, pearl, more like pearl, white pearl, but it's not a drawing on it. And it's like, wow. And the screen that lit up on the side, you walked over there. There wasn't any, like, monitors. You just sit in front of this place and it turn on. And you can watch different scenes. I wasn't sure how I controlled it, too. Sort of just sit there. Anyway, so a lot of these technologies are there and are, you know, sort of mimicked by us. And because of progressive hints that have been sent our way. And that's a creative process.
Well, that crash in Roswell, that alien crash in Roswell, they looked in there and they didn't have any wires. It didn't have so many things. And
well, they said they discovered fiber optics and, yeah, you know, micro circuits and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, integrated circuits and things like that. That may be possible, but my understanding of the progression of solid state circuitry is pretty much it's all been inspired. And coming down to the point where we are right now in terms of our integrated circuits, those things are really beyond what was described in Roswell. Some of them, when they come down to the real nano design, are in our hands right now, and using electronics that are designed at a nano level, that small level is actually at the molecular level where decisions are not made by only an on and off or switching of a transistor gate on and off, but actually by a molecular change in the spin of the atomic spin of an atom. And the detection of the spin determines the state. And this is where we're moving right now in terms of the quantum entanglement, actually using the concept of quantum entanglement, spooky action at a distance, in terms of our electronics. This is where electronics may become much like how I was able to simply interface. There was on the ship that went from I was allowed to from Mars on the way back, I was allowed to pilot it back to Earth. But it was interesting because all they told me to do was put my hands on the handprints. Interestingly enough, the handprints didn't match our handprints, you know, five fingers. Their handprints were long.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't match mine. And so don't worry, just put your hands where the handprints are. Although they were kind of indented, you know, just put them on top. Put your hands on top of there. So I did. It didn't match. But it matched close enough, I guess. And then it's sort of like, whoa. It's interesting because it reminded me of, what was that? The Wizard of Oz, and you wanted to go back home. You had to click your heels or something and wish your way back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was a wish, almost like a wish. I want to go to back home. Basically, where I've been, you know. So, of course, where I've been is imprinted. And it picked that up, and next thing you know, everywhere. And it said, oh, you did well. You're right here, you know. Back on Earth, back around Earth, orbiting Earth. And I'm not sure if I took it any more in orbit. So at one point, maybe it seemed like we were like any old aircraft at, you know, 30,000 feet. But before that, we were at orbit. That's like hundreds or 200 miles or more out. Yeah, get a good view of planet Earth.
You know, when you see these videos from the International Space Station, you're looking down at Earth, and I mean, you can't see any people down there. You can't see anything. Any humanity, you can't see anything we build. I hear you can see the you can make out the Great Wall of China that is built by man, but you really can't see cities. You may be able to see the smoke from a volcano, or if there's a big fire in a city, you could see that. But we are so small on this planet that,
yeah, populating such a small surface area, yet, you know, if you're a city like the New Jerusalem is a very compact dwelling for celestials, you know, people who are oriented. These people are oriented space dwellers. They live out in space, you know.
So do we.
Yeah, but we got a kind of a natural habitation, a planet that we...
Okay, we do.
You know,
we're lucky that way, but...
In a sense. But once... It's almost like when you think about... Do you really want to live out in the boondocks out there where there's nothing and you got to go hunt and you got to scrounge around and become a real... You know... Well, there's some people who really want to do that. But it takes a lot of know-how. And then you look at a city and everything is so convenient. You know, everything's there. There's whatever you need.
Whatever you need is there.
Yeah, in a city, it's just
hot,
put together
hot
there.
Hot, cold, running water.
I remember listening to some of the testimony, going back to listen and reading about the testimonies of those who were in Cambodia, because when I visited Cambodia, and how they descended, descended from a civilization almost into a type of agrarian totalitarian regime and enslavement, and how these people who were in these camps mourn the loss of, you know, their city. They don't have no city anymore. Everything was so hard, and they were, you know, struggling, and they were like forced to grow rice in a way that, you know, was backward. And it seemed that all the conveniences that made life rich and full, the city could provide, and that was removed, somehow thinking that that was the wrong way. Ultimately, whenever humanity loses its direction in terms of where its purpose lies, then because of that confusion, there can be too many ways of trying to find truth that will end up in darkness and death and lies. Civilization and our technology frees us from the toils of mortal living, as I said, and near mortal, but mortal living that allows the individual, if they know their destiny, to truly emboss worthwhile life experience in a well-developed soul that has exchanged partnership and developed partnership with the divine, which is a thought adjuster, which is the divinity fragment, or the fractal of God that is installed inside of every one of us, that is our partner that builds our soul. So worthwhile life experiences take many forms, but civilization is supposed to allow for many of the things that allow for that inventiveness or creativity or sharing and many other things that help us build a really true divine nature. And some of that divine nature was, like as I said, you know, us being inspired in terms of technology. Roswell, well, maybe we were back engineering. Some people say you back engineered Roswell's technology too, so that we get all the technologies that we have now. That may be partially true, but a much of it required inspiration in order to make it truly work. And the inspiration may be taking various forms, but our brain really is the receiver of much of this inspiration. So we have intelligence that receives inspiration, and then it is processed, much like how we have a computer that processes information in a way that can bring out computational results that allow us to overcome problems. And in a similar sense, our partnership with a thought adjuster allows us to overcome problems in a way that is divine. But if we disassociate with a thought adjuster, many times the problems will be more rudimentary and regress toward instinctive, animalistic natures. And we see that happening right now. What happened with the Cambodian Pol Pot regime was a descent to the more base, animalistic regime, and that was terrible because that was not enlightenment, that was moving into darkness. So anyway,
it was moving into darkness.
When Pol Pot took over.
When he took over, right?
When he took over and Pol Pot took over, he had a perhaps an idealistic ideal of what he thought could happen, but wasn't able to truly link his followers. They linked up with the more base nature, you know, the negative natures of human nature, which is closely linked to negative emotion, hatred. So destruction of the intelligent people, the educated, the teachers, the engineers, the doctors, the attorneys, all of these educated ones who are literally seen as evil by the confusion that was put into them, allowed, you know, and said that if it wasn't for them, then their lives wouldn't be so hard. But it turns around that their lives were made even worse by allowing these people to be removed through the whole country. The country, till this day, hasn't fully recovered, because the Cambodians have their own writing system and their own language. Right next to them are neighbors like Thailand and others, like close by. They're moving on. They're moving on. So the enlightenment of humanity, allowing themselves to be ignited by the, you might call it the luminescence of the divine into the consciousness, received by the human brain, brings forth results for us in the United States. Very inventive. But Britain and many of these others who were also prior to us, you know, developing, were also able to develop many wonderful inventive devices that were, you might say, inspired. So this is a way that we are, you know, we have to carefully allow for. And I was looking at the problem that we had years ago, and I said, you know, if we keep marching down this way with the oligarchs and those who are in control, who play the politics and play the laws and governances of the United States, pretty soon the country will be an artificial country that doesn't govern human life, help human life elevate toward the divine. It will be more in God we trust, which is in Boston our money. The very ideal of a society that is dividing its resources, even its labor, in a way, you know, into specialties, which require, you know, an exchange of currency, which is also an exchange of, you might say, life energy. That would have been taken away and given a, say, artificial, non-connected, not connected with the, you might say, the divine inspiration circuit, you know, where we have to be inspired. That would be terrible. And that's why I'm seeing, looking at this movement right now and seeing the Brexit, British leaving this false governances, which is pretty much a European Union is a type of governances which is trying to become an overriding power over nationality or independent nation, so sovereign governance, which was created, allowed for you might say, the uniqueness and allowing for the evolutionary ability of the human race, you know, to be inspired in different ways. But by having this overall thing, it became a total mockery of what could become, because it was like, how stupid are these bankers? And they even will never think of themselves as idiots. They have only this supposedly high ideal, but it's all away and not touching divinity, not touching God, the first source and center. And because of that, it failed, and it's going to continue its failing. United States has got to change also. I believe when I see Donald Trump and the way he is, was brought up and what he did and how he was brought up with sort of like, it was almost like a type of instrument to play out this change, this requirement for a paradigm shift, to break the mold, you might say, of the highly sophisticated puppetry of working the various leaders, temporary leaders, political leaders. They're all puppets. And you can see that, right? I can see it really well right now with Hillary Clinton. I mean, they're pulling her strings one way and the other way. She shifts her motions and pivots and moves around and changes her stance according to what is necessary, hopefully to manipulate the minds of the uninformed. Ultimately, so that the puppet masters can stay in power, these oligarchs, these groups that supposedly rule behind the scenes. And the only thing they have to manipulate with is money. So when you have a person that cannot be manipulated by that device, then you have an uncontrollable individual. But that controllable individual, Donald Trump, interestingly, was brought up under the teaching of a tremendous theologian. And he taught the power of positive thinking. So Norman Vincent Peale, who's also my kind of a mentor, because at a very young age, I was exposed to his teachings. And it is very, very, very important, because without positive thinking, which is it's a form of courage, but courage that is based on pre-rehearsal type of training and allowing you to extend yourself past the limits of your, you might say, the distance of your reach, your physical reach, your arms, into a little bit further out to becomes an extent of what is called faith. And that extension of reach or faith brings about results that are can be seen in actual structures or inventiveness or creativity. And this is an amazing thing. It's where the human race's destiny is all about. But if it loses that, then it becomes terribly tangled in a lost cause, you might say. And that's where our celestial friends are continually watching for that point of view and trying to hold our planet. Sometimes it may be necessary to hold off time, in which I guess the planet or the group of people needs to become readied, prepared, to, like soil. I often wonder, why can't you just throw a seed down? I used to watch my grandfather with his hoe, because he would till the soil with an ordinary hoe. And he'd turn the soil, and then, why don't you turn the soil? You just make a hole and put the seed in the ground and forget it. Well, the tilling of the soil prepares a lot of things. There's an exchange of nutrients and a softening of the material, so that the new seed, when it sprouts, germinates, the root can take its nourishment, moisture can get into the soil, and all the arrangement is just right for growth. And sometimes that's where the struggle is. And I looked at the prior two terms of Obama as this tilling of being played under the orchestration of the puppet masters, the globalist puppet masters, and taking and using the great power of the United States for their own good. And this is where you look at 9/11, Curtis, and the mystery of how the buildings came down. How did, was it truly only Osama bin Laden's luck that brought the buildings down?
No.
Or was it much more than this orchestration? Why the Saudis are so closely aligned together with, are the Saudis part of this orchestration? Do they have enough money to become a puppet master? Or played by some of these puppet masters? They kind of are pretty far out there in terms of wealth. But the confusion of it all is how these particular puppet masters that caused the whole orchestration of the turning of the world, the pivoting of the world, under their guidance is so insidious. They kind of creep around unseemly, do it. And they have shown by the way the towers came down and by this concept of dustification with the delinking of the molecules or what would hold actual steel members together. Jellification, which was also demonstrated by what was his name now? But he calls it jellification, where steel can become jellified. You can actually put.
Oh, that's John Hutchinson.
Yeah, the Hutchinson effect.
Hutchinson effect.
Yeah, and his father was part of the experiment at the Philadelphia experiment. Believe it or not.
John Hutchinson's father was what?
Was part of the Philadelphia experiment team. A key member.
He was?
Yeah. Hutchinson. So, And Tesla was also involved. Or was it his grandfather? It might have been his grandfather. But they were definitely involved. So even if John may not have had anything to do with it, he still inherited some of the smarts, you might say, you know, from his, because intelligence is inherited trait.
It could have been his father. It wasn't that far back. It was only 1943.
I remember they were explaining
the
key people involved in the Philadelphia, then there was a Hutchinson. Then there was a link between John and that Hutchinson. They're quite direct, so it might have been his grandfather or his father.
I had Al Bielek on the radio with me in Philadelphia, WWDB, Bernie Herman show, and Bernie would say to me during the break, he'd say, don't you want to say something? I said, he lived it. I didn't live this. This is his story. Just hearing from him. And
Al Bielek? You actually talked with Al Bielek?
Yeah, Al Bielek was on the air with me. Because he was doing a show in he was part of a show in Philadelphia that Bob Urey was putting together. That's where I first met Riley, too. Actually, it was the very next day after I did that recording with, it wasn't a recording, it was live, with Al Bielek and Bernie Herman, WWDB. Yeah, it's It's a wild story, and Preston Nichols, some friends of mine wanted to go up to go out to Montauk. That was the first time I've ever been out to Montauk. And Preston Nichols lived out on Long Island. We stopped in to see him, and he was showing us around. And I said to him at one point, we're standing between his house and the house and the garage, and I said, well, do you have anything from the USS Eldridge you can show me? Just, you know. He says, well, what do you call them? It held all the electronics or the electrical. It was like a metal boxes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you buy a stereo. It comes in a metal box, and it's all the
cabinet.
Yeah. Cabinets, that's it. That's the word I was trying to think of. Yeah, so these old cabinets were just in a pile, and there on the bottom it said USS Eldridge. I go, my gosh, and you have it out here? But it's, yeah. He had so many things from the Eldridge. It was just something else.
They had to scrap a lot of it off because it was so screwed up, right?
Yeah, it was really. Then we got out to Montauk, and we couldn't get on the base, and so then we called him again. We called him on the phone, and we can't get on the base. And he says, "Oh, go down this road, and you'll see a tree or some kind of telephone pole. I think it was a tree that fell on the fence, and climb on that. You can get over that." So we did. Now we're on the base and we're walking, and we had fishing poles with us. It was husband and wife and myself. So I was the third person, and they were like, oh my gosh, look at these buildings. They recognized them in the video because they had all these boys in these bunks underground with refrigeration, a huge refrigeration equipment I saw. I wasn't underground, I saw the pictures. I go, my gosh, if that's really underground, how could that be? Because it's not Hawaii, it's here. So the ground is cold in a cooler, like 55 Fahrenheit. And but you'd have to cool it. You know, you have so many bodies down there that you have to cool it. So all of a sudden, phew, we saw a car. And I go, oh, do you think they saw us? I saw us. We're the only ones out here. They had to have seen us. And then another car, that was a brown car, then another, a white car, whew, came up to us. And these two policemen, or guys in uniform, what are you guys doing here? And, well, we just act like we didn't know what we were doing. We're just going fishing. What do you mean, what are you doing? How'd you get in here? Get in here, we're not getting in anywhere. We're just going out to the ocean. Oh, we climbed over this fence. Oh, you got to get out of here, da, da, da. So they left, and I left. I had a video camera at the time, and when people didn't have video cameras, I didn't put the camera on them, but I just had it facing the ground, but the audio was running. And so my friends, they were walking fast to get off the base. And I go, hey, we've come all this way. Let's just walk we'll just walk out of here. So we walked out, climbed over that tree on the fence, and then when we're walking down the path, I look back, and here was another car, a different third car, and this is a military base that's supposed to be turned into a state park that was closed down. And now here's the third car, and these guys in coveralls, and they were looking at the tree that fell down. That's how we climbed in. And I go, my gosh, three cars, and it's supposed to be a... And we saw new cable that went into the ground and had 1982 on the side of it. And I thought, hey, I thought the base was all closed down before 1982. But something was still going on underground. And that's all part of that Al Bielek and Duncan Cameron. And we had a few of them at that meeting.
So, there's no Duncan. Al Bielek supposedly was transported forward in time, right?
Yes, him and his brother, and I think his brother was named. I think he was Duncan Cameron.
Yeah, of course.
The equipment was going haywire, was their story, and they tried to shut it off, and they couldn't shut it off, and they opened up the hatch and jumped overboard, and they landed supposedly in the Delaware River, the river right on, that's right next to me. And they said they didn't land in the water. They landed on the shores of Montauk 40 years into the future in 1983.
Yeah.
And, you know...
Yeah, yeah. The story is pretty peculiar because, yeah, that's an interesting story. The Philadelphia Experiment, Al Bielek, and... Even Al Bielek had another story. He's taken forward in time to a future city, floating up off of the ground, because they learned how to levitate. Yeah, that's all kinds of interesting stuff. One of the
last things I learned about the Philadelphia Experiment, I don't remember where I heard this or saw this, but I heard it was wrapped in copper, the USS Eldridge, that Tesla had it wrapped in copper. Mm-hmm. And what did he have it wrapped? What was the copper made of? It was made of copper pennies. And they collected all the copper pennies they could to wrap that ship in copper pennies. And that's the year they made pennies out of that other metal.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever collect coins and the pennies weren't copper in 1943? I had a bunch of those pennies that were not copper.
Not copper. Oh, they were some other alloy.
Yeah, it was like some other kind of metal. They were using the copper for that Eldridge, supposedly. I don't know. I'm not there. I wasn't alive or there on the scene. But Tesla was involved with that, and then Tesla just said, "This is not working right, or this is dangerous," and
yeah,
he dropped out.
Tesla thought it was too risky.
Too risky, so he dropped out, and then they took over, and they got Einstein in there to Albert Einstein to take over what Tesla was doing, and Albert Einstein says, I have no idea what Tesla was doing. I don't have a clue.
Right. But it worked because Tesla had already done some transport experiments where, you know, some...
Yeah, that ship
some
was...
devices were... Or some physical... was teleported away. And they found it later. How it happened, but he had done something and was beginning to unravel some of the... And so Tesla actually had really opened up a lot of secrets. At least he gifted us with some ordinary stuff, with ordinary AC electricity and all that, which has happened in terms of electrical and electronic development. So anyway, this is all part of that. This is the wonderful thing about this. At one time, I was a minister of the Gospel of Jesus Christ. I had a following of about 40 or 50 people. And my message of, besides the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the destiny of the human race, acceptance of Him, His Lord and Savior, actually, because of the higher destiny, was limited in terms of its audience to people who would like to know more about what heaven is about. And I would try to explain some things. And it was all part of the, you might say, gaining this traction we need for the next hire, you know, to pull religion from its, you might say, entrenched legacy into the higher, more wonderful reality of where our planet's destiny can lie. But right now we gotta shift some things the way we do business and how we live life. Now, you have terrible shifts that were made. They were made not in the name of the divine destiny, but made in the name of some other. And I talk about Pol Pot because seeing that firsthand and talking with people who lived through the Pol Pot, it's just a terrible time. You know, there's other ones that, you know, I didn't go and see. But humanity has never been friends with humanity. We're on that precipice right now that could very well lead to, you know, a very dark time if we don't play our cards right, you might say.
Yeah, play our cards right. You mentioned Donald Trump.
Yeah. Donald Trump has to, you know, kind of mess the table up a bit. Change. That's a paradigm shift, you know. Yeah. Change the way things are done.
He will really change things.
Yeah. So, otherwise, it's puppet master time again, which is hard.
Continue the puppet master?
Yeah, well.
And most people don't have a clue that they're... They think, oh, well, what can I do? But we've been in a way incarcerated. We didn't have the life we could have had.
Right.
You know, they keep things from us, and that Mr. Trump, he wants to open things up, and I suggest people listen to Right Side Broadcasting, that's RSBN.TV. Donald Trump's going to be speaking in two places today. I think one is Henderson, Nevada, and Reno, Nevada. And I'm going to hear both of those later. But anyway, the one in Reno, Nevada is very close to Spark, Nevada, and that's where Elon Musk is building that gigafactory in Spark. So Donald Trump has to mention Elon Musk today, I think. I've never heard him speak about Elon Musk. He talks about the car industry moving to Mexico, and we don't make cars anymore in Detroit. And then at one point he was saying, at one point we made the cars and you couldn't drink the water in Mexico. Now the cars are made in Mexico and you can't drink the water in Flint, Michigan. It's, and when you said, you know, humanity is going through terrible times, and
well, is that a point of choosing? And it's in a paradigm shift, as well, is part of the destiny arrangement.
Part of the destiny arrangement.
Yeah, so right now we can choose a type of destiny. But that's placed into the hearts of those who are truly guided toward it, because it's a choice. And our life is made up of choices, right? Tell me a point in your life where your choices were completely removed from you. You had no choice.
Oh, I know when. when I walked into boot camp.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. But it's more like a joke. But, yeah.
Suddenly it was like, oh my gosh, my life is so different.
Yeah,
that was they were indoctrinating me to listen to whatever they wanted me to do.
Yeah, that's because you became the property of the United States of America. For that period. Yeah,
they told me to watch this. This was in Chicago in 1966. It was the coldest winter they've ever had. And they told me to watch this dumpster for between midnight and 4 a.m. Yeah. And I ended up getting pneumonia, and I was in the hospital for 2 weeks in the hospital. I lost the company I was with and had to go into another company. And it was just, I wasn't in control of my own destiny.
Yeah.
It was their arrangement. It wasn't mine.
Yeah.
Gosh, what a thing. But, Donald Trump, I hope he talks about Elon Musk. Elon Musk
He's
doing good.
Wasn't he the PayPal? He started off making PayPal as a kid.
Well, yes. He made some kind of computer device or computer game, and he sold it for, I think, $500. And then the next one he sold for $300 million. And then he sold PayPal. Mm-hmm. And then he bought Tesla Motors and took over that company. And recently in the news, that catastrophe they had in Cape Canaveral, where they were just filling the rocket, they weren't even firing the engine, and now they think it was some kind of sabotage. They heard a pop first before the thing exploded. I don't know.
I guess he's got some enemies too now.
Yeah.
That's sabotage.
What I don't understand about Elon Musk is, why does he want to go to Mars?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's a long way back, and you're not going with Tan and Nella, so.
Well, the strange thing was that we were way out, you know. I could see the whole sphere of Mars, and we came in a little closer. I said, can we get in closer? We got in a little closer. Is that close enough? And could see the texture of the surface a little bit much better. And I said, yeah, this is Mars, definitely. And they didn't want me to get much closer. I could have asked, can we land on Mars? Yeah, I think they were kind of afraid if I would ask that. Because they would, I think they might have obliged, but there were some things going on Mars. I got the immediate impression that there was...
You had a chance.
but there were some things going on. They didn't want me to get any closer. It seemed like they didn't want to get much closer.
Yeah, they didn't want to go closer. Maybe, close enough.
Maybe the devil's there. So anyway...
And why not go to the moon?
Yeah. Well,
why doesn't Elon Musk want to go to the moon?
Been there, done that. That's why.
Well, been there. Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a lot of doubts about that. There's no jet blast under the lunar lander.
I don't know.
Well, look at it. It's just plopped right down on the surface. Everybody's walking around, and you know, it shows all the dust on their feet or how dusty it is, but there's no dust from landing. And then when one of the astronauts, either Buzz Aldrin or Neil Armstrong, he was saying, oh, we're, you know, as they were coming down, landing on the moon for the first time, oh, we're kicking up some dust. And kicking up some dust, you couldn't even hear the rocket engine in the background, where I can hear your little tiny air conditioner. But if that was a rocket engine near you that close, we couldn't hear a word you'd say because of the sound of that rocket engine. So you couldn't hear the rocket engine. There's just so many things about going to the moon that just doesn't make any sense. And and they put that camera on their chest, that all I can think of is Blaupunkt. But anyway, that camera on their chest, and everything was framed just beautifully, and it didn't have a casing. I mean, when I was a kid, I had an underwater camera casing, and for my 35 millimeter camera, and but this camera had no casing. Hasselblad, that's what it was. It had no casing on its chest. Well, the film would just boil in there. So just there's just so many reasons. But why doesn't Elon Musk want to go to the moon? And why haven't we gone back? I mean, Christopher Columbus came here, and then a lot of people came here. So why not go back to the moon?
Well, let the other guys go.
Well,
why didn't the Russians go afterwards?
Yeah, why didn't they go?
Yeah, they got the message.
Yeah, was the message that get off this, get off here?
Yeah, maybe they're not welcome.
Maybe they just weren't welcome.
I know that. The pilot said, "Yeah, we've got a smaller operation in the back over there." On the backside of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So they have a small operation. But I don't know what they mean by small operation, but in comparison to the New Jerusalem, yeah, anything is huge. It could be very big and still be considered small. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I would love to go to the moon. But Mars, I don't know. Not with our technology of those rockets. I mean, one of Tesla's students, that Otis T. Carr, he has a device that Elon Musk could make. Elon Musk has the equipment and the engineers to build what Otis T. Carr said could be a spacecraft. I don't see anyone building that. We're trying to build it. I mean, that Ralph Ring, he had a machine shop build part of it, and George Freebot, he had someone build those double cone pieces, but that's just part of it. But, you know, that's one thing we have to do. We have to build it and see if it works, or get it to work.
Yeah.
But Nikola Tesla, I have several places that said he came from Venus, including him, from that article from 1900, that when I was a boy, that paragraph. Well, we're maybe getting a little bit off subject here, but I don't know why Elon Musk wants to go to Mars. Because you just want to get back after you go there, right? I mean, what is on Mars? There's no... They don't make Mars bars there. Do you remember Mars bars?
The idea is that, you know, you see in Elon Musk, tell you the truth, okay, here we go. You see in Elon Musk, very deep, innate drive, human psyche, human soul to populate space. What I got from our celestial friends was a little answer asked about them awaiting, adopting the human race for living in space, living a hope that you would have long before the end of the planet Earth, or the end of the solar system, or the sun, you know, going, dying out, would have joy, long before that have joined us out here, because what they were exposing me to was the higher destiny, was part of the higher destiny is to live out in a sphere completely fabricated by the technologies of the higher races of space, people of space, the shared technologies, to build entire planets, spheres for habitation and development, all toward the purpose of becoming a divine son, coming it from the point of mortal origin, finite origin, having a beginning, toward the ascent, toward having no end. And this is an unbelievable job, you might say, for them. Yet, part of it is to dwell in heaven, in space.
Dwell in the house.
So that is a drive that drives us forward. This is our destiny. It's not on Earth, but out there, in heaven.
Well, our destiny is out there in heaven.
Yes.
Well, let's, we could go on talking about this, but let's close and
it's
continue.
It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a while.
Well, we're up to an hour and 16 minutes. But that doesn't really matter. But yeah, our destiny out there in heaven. Well, that's why I think Donald Trump would be better in there. He wouldn't be holding us back, because we can build a lot of things.
Okay.
All right.
For now.
All right. So we'll close and talk to you next Tuesday.
Okay.
All right. Aloha, Michael.
Aloha.
Aloha.